Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Welcome to Space News! I'm Braden.
I'm Dan, and coming up, we've got Red Sun Sensations, Bigfoot Explanations, Comet Illuminations, Deep Space Amino Acid Foundations, and Interspecies Cooperations on this, well, I guess inaugural episode of Space News.
grab a coffee, sit back, and let's find out what's going on this week. Obviously, we're listening to this on a Monday. We just dropped awesome case file last week, which was case file 267. That was Polybius. Which one was it? Holloman. That's what it was. Holloman Air Force Base. Obviously, if you listen to the case file, my mistake. I thought it was the Hollow Man. Still a very interesting case file. If you got any comments or questions or thoughts about that episode, shoot them in the chat, and we'll address any and all comments and questions at the end of the show. But what do we got going on for Space News?
Well, today, let's see. For Space News, we've got a lot of interesting topics popping up. This week, space has not been boring. Let's see. We've got... right here, like I said,
before we get going, sure. I forgot to mention that this segment of Space News is sponsored by Pluker Tattoos, who is a top tier Patreon supporter. So thank you. You help keep the news flowing.
You're helping keep your fellow theorites informed about what's going on in space with two big dummies. So our first thing is, headline that popped up. Astronomers find what may be a habitable world 31 light years away. So that's a hop, skip, and a jump, you know, if you're in, that's one generation ship length, maybe?
About that? 100%. Your kids could be living on this planet.
Well, living on a spaceship, and then, you know, they could be born on a spaceship and then set foot on a different planet. So this is a newly discovered exoplanet, and it is about, it's technically a super Earth, because it is 1.36 times the mass of Earth, and they named it, if that's not cool enough, its name is Wolf 1069b.
It's a good name.
Yeah, that sounds like a place where you would raise space marines. You know, you want your kids to be tough. Don't put them on the don't chuck them outside to play. Send them to Wolf 1069B, right? You know. So let's see.
It's pretty warm there too.
Is it being habitable? Even though I guess habitable could be a relative term, I suppose. Since if you think about it, humans can pretty much, just on our planet alone, we're able to make any place that is, you know, would be hell could probably be habitable. We have people who live in Antarctica. It's not exactly comfortable, but it's habitable. So a team of astronomers that was led by Diana Kosakowski at the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy in Germany have discovered a nearby red dwarf star, which is named Wolf 1069. So that's where you get the name 1069b. This planet orbits that star in about 15.6 days.
Yeah, that's a quick year,
right?
That's a quick turnaround on the calendar year.
Its distance is equal, or it's about equivalent to about 1/15 the separation between the Earth and the Sun. So it's a lot closer than our Sun is. And now, if this star was like ours, like the yellow star, what you would get is that, you know, it's way out of the Goldilocks zone for us. But because this is a red dwarf star.
No, and like outside, it's too far. It's inside. It's outside the Goldilocks zone, but on the wrong side.
Right. Well, outside. I'm saying outside. Yeah. Outside the Goldilocks zone, closer wise as opposed to inside. Yeah. So just like inside, whatever. But yeah, if it were a yellow dwarf like ours, like you would have a it would be Mercury. It'd just be like a solar blasted wasteland of a rock. But since it's a red dwarf star, it's much cooler, and you can have these the Goldilocks zones for a habitable planet is much there's a much more you can be closer to the sun than Earth. So now the radiation that the planet receives, since that should be a concern for most people, is about 65% of what Earth receives from the sun. So it's actually less. Oh,
so it's way less. It's way safer than Earth, radiation-wise.
Yeah, you wouldn't need as much sunscreen as you do here on Earth. You know, it's like people go outside, say, oh, you know, you need to get some sun. And you're like, dude, the sun gives you cancer. Like, why you go outside? but if you were on Wolf 1069b, wouldn't be so much of a problem. But there is one issue. Well, I guess depends on how much of an issue is that you like daytime or nighttime or a regular diurnal cycle, because Wolf 1069b is actually seems to be tidally locked to its sun.
I think that's good news. You get the choice. You know what? Earth, it's kind of ridiculous that they force you. Oh, now you got to be in nighttime. Now you got to be in daytime. Not with Wolf 360B or whatever. you can choose whether you want to live in day or night. So I imagine if we made that planet habitable, we would probably be, you know, all along the equator of where the day meets the night. So it's like front yard, daytime. Backyard, nighttime, right? And your house is like, everything's just right on that border.
It's kids, it's time to go to bed. And like, no, it's still daytime outside. Go to your room. And then it's nighttime. Like, oh, it's nighttime, time to go to bed.
All the equator cities, all the slums would be in the night zone.
Oh, it'd be sweet. Yeah.
Right?
All the vampires can live on one side. Yeah. Zell can live happily on one side and not have to worry about it. You know, we can visit him from the light side. And no problem. I said, it appears to be. We can't really tell whether 1069B at this point is tidally locked. And there's a lot of details that are there. But just because of its proximity to its star, much like our moon, like the closer you get, a body gets to like another one, the gravitational pull kind of puts the gravitational forces kind of put brakes on its rotation, therefore tidally locking it. So a lot of astronomers say that it's potentially that's what could happen. It could have a normal rotation. We're not 100% sure, but you know, it is, we're finding more of these all the time and more of these planets that are potentially, you know, we get a good spectrometer reading on them. You might know if it actually has a atmosphere and all those cool things that we could perhaps reach in 30 some years if you're traveling at the speed of light.
Yeah, once we crack the speed of light, then, you know, we're a lifetime away from this place. No problem. Easy.
So let's see. We've got another one. If everybody was lucky enough to go out and get their eyes on the green comet that was streaking its way through the skies earlier this, what is it? Couple weeks.
February. It was like February 1st, February 2nd. I think that's when it came out.
So everybody knows what I'm talking about. You're talking about the green comet.
why they should have called it the Grinch star.
The Grinch star.
Right. Like that's kind of what I was thinking when I saw it. I was like, well, you got the green comet. Like, yeah, okay, it is green.
Right.
But the name's not very creative. Like we could have.
I mean, it was probably just a Green Lantern passing through our sector.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it has the enticing name of C-2022E3 ZTF, or Comet ZTF for short.
Grinch star.
Yeah, Grinch star. It's way better. Well,
and
you know,
if you missed it, I just want to say, like, you know, because a lot of times with spaces is hard because stuff pops up so quick. But do not worry if you miss the Grinch star. Because you will get another opportunity in 50,000 years.
So that's it. I mean, that's easy. Just one thing. You just got to be around for the next 50,000 years. Got to hang out. No problem. You know, people, you know, society will collapse. People will build pyramids again. You know, they'll discover metalworking. You know, time will fly by. You know, it'll be back around no time. Let's see. So the comet came within 26 million miles, or 42 million kilometers for everybody else, of our planet. So it's kind of, it's relatively close. But I don't think it was actually possible to see like details with the naked eye. You were able to see like just kind of this greenish glowing object in the sky, if you were able to put your eyes on it.
Someone in the chat has said, I don't control the ads on these websites. So someone is like, is no one going to talk about the bending over waifu ad at the bottom of the article? No, we're not. We're just going to ignore that. I saw that. There's just I was going to show this awesome picture here. This picture wins the Stonehenge, but as I pulled it up, I looked to my left and there was a toe fungus nail ad. So, you know, if you got toe fungus, head to nailfungus.ca, you know?
Yep. Free advertising for them.
Yeah, but that's honestly, that's the winner picture. Like, look at that. Above Stonehenge, the green comet. I think I had one more, this one, a space photo. I don't know how they took that one, but photographed on January 18th, so it's through a telescope or something, but look, like, amazing photos coming out of this thing.
Yeah, the green is actually something that's, it's quite rare in a comet. Scientists were talking about trying to figure out for a while why it had this green color, and they just kind of recently discovered that the green is due to its the comet's coma, essentially, like the atmosphere that it's developed around the center of the comet. You know, since comets are just big ice balls hurtling through space, as they get closer to our sun, all of that, you know, as that ice melts and releases gas and whatever, you have this like temporary you have a temporary atmosphere, which they call a coma. Now, within this atmosphere, you have carbon molecules. They have a molecule called diatomic carbon, or C2. And when that carbon in the gets absorbed into the atmosphere and then it gets ripped apart, as it kind of just does, it gets into the excited mode around the coma and whatever, boom, and splits apart. You get this green color as it burns off.
And I just want to point out that Jack Bennett pointed out that ad. I don't control these ads. I never looked up the waifu. I swear, I don't have foot fungus. I wasn't
based on your browsing history.
No. I wasn't looking up foot fungus things. These are like, they must have a deal with the websites. It's not me, I swear.
I mean, Google tracks your ads and tracks your activity and they feed you ads.
No. I want to clear that up. Right. So Jack Bennett, thanks for pointing that out. No, absolutely not.
Now, were you looking up just waifu and toe fungus like separately, or you like together? Because that would be a little bit more weird.
Together.
So you've got the, of course, we've got the James Webb Space Telescope, and now that it's up there and fully functioning, and it's been for a while, you know, space is never going to be boring again. I think we can say that for a definite statement. So. Scientists have said that they have actually found life's elemental building blocks in the depths of darkest space. There is a molecular cloud that they've been looking at called Chameleon 1, which is about 500 light years from Earth. And so when scientists analyze the data from the telescope, it has shown that there is the definite presence of frozen carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and sulfur. And these are the elements which are vital for forming atmospheres, and also for molecules such as amino acids. And they kind of call these, like, all of them together. They kind of take the first letter of each one of those molecules, or whatever the what am I talking about, elements, and they call it chons. CHONS.
I'll say this about scientists. They're like smart people, but they're like name creativity low.
Sometimes you don't get real lucky, and the people who make the discoveries, and they're not really creative in their
I think there should be a field of science that is just dedicated to making the names. Like, so when you make a scientific discovery, you be like, this is what I discovered, and I'm going to call it CHONS. And they're like, nah, We're going to call it something better.
No, so
like
so,
there's
yeah.
some sort of review board that like well, there you should know, be peer a review where they're just like this name's terrible.
Yeah, when they go to get their PhDs or whatever, there should be like yeah. a there should be a class that a mandatory class as part of the curriculum of becoming a scientist. Mm-hmm. That's just acronyms, like in, yeah. how to make interesting acronyms. Yeah,
maybe just like you know in those science like PhD science like you know if you're going to get your PhD or your master's or whatever, maybe a couple creative writing courses in there. Just something so we don't end up with chons. But this is cool because this is a thing that were like the building blocks of life. Like we've known in theory that they're out there, right? And it's like we should be able to find them. And we're just starting to now basically get proof of it, right? We're proving all these theoretical possibilities now. So it's a really crazy time to be alive because I always forget a lot of these things we go like, you know, they were theories and they're belief theories. So people like, I don't think people realize it's as big as news as it is because they go, oh yeah, well, of course there's building blocks. It's like, yeah, but we've never been out there, right? So we're just starting to get the, you know, the confirmations now that like what we've been thinking is true, the truth is, right? Like,
yeah, and so like, and when you think about it, we're like we're looking farther out into space with the James Webb Space Telescope, farther than we've ever seen before, which is also you know distance you know equals time, whatever. You're looking into the past. So essentially, what scientists are so excited about this discovery is that this could possibly mean that you have these what they say like prebiotic molecules, things like water, methane, ammonia, carbonyl sulfide, and organic. All and methanol, like you can have all of these, and that these are more common than we thought in the places where stars form. So once you know, so you have all of the elements there that are that we deem necessary for organic life, like here on Earth. That these could perhaps be. This is just that the formation of Earth is not a fluke. It's not unusual. It's like all the pieces are there. And so you have, and then when a star forms, it's more like you have all of those things there. Then you can have you can form an Earth, you can form other planets and things like that. So we're finding more and more proof to that, or more evidence to support that theory that they, all of these molecules are available. They don't just like you don't just have the regular atoms, but you have the actual molecules already there, all the elements necessary to create a habitable planet like here on Earth.
So cool.
But if we bring it back down from space and we put our feet back on Earth, we've had a couple of interesting developments here as well. So there is a if everybody is familiar with the idea that you know some animals here, some people would say that are at least as intelligent, maybe are a little less intelligent than humans, probably on a ranking scale of whatever. You'd probably put humans, then you put maybe primates, and then usually yeah. people put the third one, usually put dolphins.
Octopus. Oh, or dolphins.
Or maybe octopi. Yeah, we could. We may put those. But dolphins have been doing something and have been observed doing something quite interesting lately. So there is a group of fishers from the city of Laguna, Brazil, that have been working, apparently, with the a certain species of bottlenose dolphins that live in their area. And so I guess the tradition goes back, or at least this activity has been recorded for more than, you know, just observed for more than 140 years. And that these dolphins apparently will drive schools of mullet towards the shore, right where near where fishers are gathered, usually wading into the shadows to cast their nets. And then these dolphins will actually give a cue to the fishers, to like a physical cue to cast their nets. And so this is actually an activity that we haven't that people have kind of known about. And it's something that we don't get to see very often. Like we have You know, interspecies cooperation's not a complete mystery to us. Like, we have things like dogs, cats, things like that, or relationships between those. You know, stuff we have as pets, horses is a good example. But dolphins is something that we don't really see. Now, I would say, I would say this is way more interesting because it's like two species and two very different ecosystems, as opposed to, because you have horses, you have dogs, sure, you know, and cats to some lesser extent. I mean, cats really don't. I don't know. Do they really care? They would probably eat you if you died in your house. Like,
yeah. Well, and like the thing that kind of frustrates me with this ad is because it's a little misleading.
Was this an ad for dolphins?
No, yeah, no.
It's dolphin PR.
Yeah, this is what this is. This is nothing more than, you know, some propaganda. Because like an incredible thing happens when dolphins and humans team up. We fish. Like that's the gist of the article, and I'm saying like this is not incredible. Like, like us and dolphin scientists have never accomplished a lot together, and now to be like, oh, we're fishing together. It's like we were fishing separately forever. Like if you think about what we've done with chimpanzee scientists and dog scientists, we've gone to space.
Collaborations,
we've gone to space, and here we are. Celebrating teaming up with a dolphin scientist to fish. We've been fishing for centuries.
So are you saying dolphin scientists like dolphins who are scientists?
Well, obviously they're teaming up. We're teaming up, right?
Right.
So I am going to deduce but that yeah, these dolphins are also scientists.
Okay, and the chimpanzee.
Are you saying they're not scientists? Are you telling me the chimp that went to space is not a scientist?
Well, I'm not sure if he has a PhD. Like. Maybe.
Well, I would say this. I said PhD is a human thing. He has the chimpanzee equivalent of a PhD, whatever that is.
Right.
Is that some shape training? Putting some blocks through holes? Right? I don't know.
But like I said, what I find most impressive about this is that it is two very different ecosystems that which we come from, you know, them being aquatic mammals and us being the terrestrial kind. This is something that, you know, we both normally an interspecies cooperation will come like the animals get something. It is a symbiotic relationship. We both get something out of it. And what was the kind of the big mystery about this is, and it still kind of is exactly what the dolphins get from this relationship, this alliance that they have. So it's kind of it's suggested, and there seems to be evidence to kind of support the idea that these dolphins, what they'll do is that they will kind of they'll do like a deep dive, so that I guess they'll like kind of kick their rear fins like into the air and stuff when they go down. And the fishermen have come to realize that this means that they're going to push the mullets like into the closer to the shore. They cast out their nets and they get them. What the dolphins get out of it apparently is that the fish
we allow them to sexually assault 5,000 humans a year. That's the deal Eisenhower made with the dolphins.
5,000? That's a lot.
Worldwide?
Is that like an official report?
I don't know. I'm just saying. I guarantee you, from the rumors I've heard, and you know, I saw it on King of the Hill once. Of dolphins just are rampant perverts.
The information. Remember that one? Are you going to start getting ads for SeaWorld on your yeah, on your websites? The whole thing is that these dolphins what scientists think is going on is that when the fishermen cast their nets out, the mullet will be captured, and then this makes it easier for ones that are they split off from the schools of mullet that are being captured, and that they make it easier for the dolphins to pursue and then eat them, you know, catching them one by one as opposed to trying to catch them in a school, which is a little bit more difficult. This is something that has actually there are tales. I'm gonna say tales. There is evidence from Aboriginal cultures in the south of Australia of this actually being the case, and something kind of similar to this going on in Aboriginal cultures like hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago.
The most interesting thing to me about this is it's like in this situation, we've kind of been trained by the dolphins. Like, there's no communication. It's not like it's a controlled environment where we, like, train chimpanzees or, you know, train dogs. Like, these are wild animals that now we just, we've figured out. They've been like, hey, I think they're using nets. And the dolphins are like, hopefully, you know, they did a solid. They trusted us to throw some back, right?
They're dolphin scientists put on their lab coats. And
yeah. And they're like, hey, how can we trick these hairless apes into giving us some fish?
These disgusting two-leggers. It's something that is interesting to me just thinking about. There's a science fiction series that kind of plays with the idea of kind of what they give the term uplifting. And it is a term that they use to kind of, in the future, humans are able to increase the intelligence of certain species, and dolphins is one of them. I think chimpanzees, like the first one they do is chimpanzees. And so you essentially have like the chimpanzee from the, what's the chimpanzee butler from the monkey butler from Umbrella Academy, kind of like that. Yeah. So you have them on, if not having the equivalent intellect of a human, having something beyond that. But dolphins are another one. But it would be really interesting to be able to kind of – I know scientists have been working on ways to kind of interpret the way that dolphins communicate and kind of, you know, contextualize it for humans to kind of process. It would be interesting, you know, via Sequest, if people remember that TV show, and Darwin, the dolphin, being able to talk. But hearing what they have to talk and like how they perceive their environment, because it would be completely different from ours, you know. Essentially, like, your entire life is, you think about a dolphin, it's like in where we kind of have three, we understand there are three dimensions, but we're very much like we live on the ground, you know. Yeah. we have terra firma beneath our feet, whereas a dolphin is constantly moving. Like it is just like it's almost flying, and they live their entire life flying. Like a bird, you could still say, has to land at some point, where dolphins are constantly moving through fluid and stuff like that. It would be interesting to see like them try to explain it to a human.
Try to walk.
That too.
I bet they're no good at it. Knock them down a peg or two.
Hey, you come up here on land, I'll show them, teach you a thing or two. Yeah. I'll teach you.
I can swim. You can't walk. Yeah. Like, I swim better than they walk.
You swim better than they walk?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know about that. but now...
Buddy, I'm graceful in the water. What are you talking about?
I'm like a
smooth porpoise in there. You can just picture it. Like, when you've seen, like, an otter or something, or a seal, like, in the water, like, at the... Now just picture me in a pair of shorts doing the same thing. It's exact same.
It's probably extremely tempting for some dolphin perverts out there, I'm sure.
It's beautiful, yet disturbing all at the same time. You're like, he moves so gracefully, but he's hard to look at.
I can't tear my eyes away. Makes me physically ill. But besides our little interesting jaunt into human cooperation, we have a little bit of cryptid news as well.
Oh, yeah. Cryptid news. I don't know what this segment's going to be called, but we're going to call it cryptid news.
We're still workshopping
right now.
It. Yeah,
we're still workshopping it. And this is brought to you by Trent Robertson. He is sponsoring this week's cryptid news.
So on our, you know, in this segment of cryptid news, we have a new report by a data scientist that posits the idea that perhaps there is a prosaic explanation for our favorite North American wood ape, Bigfoot. The idea that they came up with is that to take, they assembled a
crack team.
Well, it's just one person. pretty sure. It's just one person. This scientist went ahead and took a number of data to kind of overlay with each other and to kind of they started out with the idea, which is not a new idea. This is something that is probably like in 2005, 2008, a couple other scientists have kind of done the same thing, where they figured that if you had an increase in the population of perhaps, you know, there are people who would, you know, if you've never been out in the woods before or maybe rarely, and you saw something standing up on two legs and walking around in a bipedal gait, you might be like, that's Bigfoot. But if you're somebody who is familiar with the woods, you're a woodsman, you're a hunter or whatever, that, you know, something standing up on two legs, what else stands up on two legs in the forest?
Bigfoot.
No, besides Bigfoot. I'm asking you.
Well, I mean, there's a couple. Could be a mountain goat.
Sure.
About to ram another mountain goat.
Okay.
A moose trying to get a low-lying branch.
Okay.
You know, maybe a black bear.
Sure. And that is where the scientists started as well. They figured that a black bear, a large, dark, shaggy-haired mammal, you know, that is usually seen within close proximity to where humans would frequent in a forest. This is where the scientists started. And what they thought was that if you could overlay the data, see, okay, we have a large population of black bears, there should be an increase in Bigfoot sightings, because if those two correlate, there's just a possibility that perhaps you have evidence to support that these Bigfoot sightings are actually just black bears. Along with one of the articles that we came across, and when I saw this, they included a video. Was it Inside Edition? had a video of I like seeing them, but they also creep me out. Of like when you have videos of certain animals kind of walking around in human form or whatever.
Yeah, I have the video here, because like right away I was like, this is preposterous. I know what a black bear looks like, and if I saw a black bear standing up, I wouldn't instantly recognize it as a black bear. So let's take a look at their video of one of the things they point to.
Well, that's Bigfoot.
Damn, it's pretty convincing. You're like, holy shit, he is strutting around. Like that is uncanny. He's strutting it out. This black bear, it walks. He like jogs like a little bit of a man with his little dangly hands. Now, you know, pointing to this, like looking at this bear walk, I was like, this is an uncanny walk. I was like, this is really wild. The thing with this black bear is, this specific one we're looking at, he has two front paw injuries. So whether that's rendered his front paws useless, or I can't remember, or from whatever. So that's how he can't walk on them right now or at all. So he's just
adapted
to be like, he's like, I'm a human now.
I'm going to walk like those idiots. Like,
I mean, it's pretty convincing, because if that thing was, say, you know, 300-400 meters from you in the woods, and it was just like you couldn't really get a good glimpse, like a good beat on it through the bushes, and it's just trucking like that, like doing that little slinky walk, I could definitely see, you know, being like, that's Bigfoot 100% like in the woods, because it just looks so unnatural.
Look, yeah, it's unsettling watching it like kind of gait around like a human. And I guess this one had been around, especially probably black bears are probably a little bit more likely to be mistaken for Bigfoot, as they would be, you would see them where humans are. I mean,
tactical flash in the chat just said, he said, nah, that's a dude in a bear suit. You know, you're going to have your naysayers anywhere. That's,
have you seen how far bear suit technology has come? I mean, it could be. I don't know, there's some pretty good bear suits out there. Oh, that's a quality funny. Bear suit that's if that's funny. A person
I love
in a bear it. Suit.
I love, I, part of me, I really like just the, like, any, like, I love the climate right now where it's like, I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's the truth. I will still be skeptical. Like, that to me is so funny. So it's like, I like it. Thanks, Tactical Flash, for that. It made me.
or is it a Bigfoot in a bear suit?
Well, I mean, after seeing this, video, right, and hearing that these, you know, I do have some questions, because I'm like, you know, like, yes, you're saying that the bear, wherever there's bears, there's Bigfoot sightings. And it's like, well, I mean, wherever there's deer, there's Bigfoot sightings.
Right.
And, it's like, yeah. You could extrapolate that to a lot of different things. So it's like, yeah, there's another creature with black fur, but it's like, not all the time is there black fur.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Actually, the scientists brought it up in their paper, saying that places like the southern United States, where you have, you know, where it's not Bigfoot, it's the skunk ape, you know, places like Florida, Arkansas, Louisiana, these places, you have these dark, shaggy-haired primates or bipedal creatures that are walking around. People swear that they have seen these things, that black bears don't live in these areas or are not typical in these areas. Now, this scientist, the one that I'm talking about, their name is Flo Foxen. What they did is they actually took data and they kind of reviewed it from other. There's two other scientists that have done this kind of study before, taking data from various Bigfoot sightings. Foxen got their data from the Bigfoot. The BFRO, the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, and kind of put it, you know, they put their eyewitness accounts.
What a slap in the face. He's like, yeah, just black bears. They're like, no! You used our research against us.
But it is strange that it's like they marked that, you know, in their report. They said, you know, notably Sasquatch sightings have been reported in states with no known breeding black bear populations. So, like I said, like Florida and those places. So you still have Bigfoot sightings in these other places. So what could that possibly be? I mean, if you don't have black bears, I mean, it's not an alligator in a bear suit. I mean,
let's use this new information we have. We now know that, you know, it's a probable possible that Bigfoot sightings are black bears. Well, just so happens that someone on our Facebook group, Theorite group, shared a post by James Archie Archibald. Phenomenal name.
Fantastic.
So now I thought we could take a peek at this post, because after watching that video, I got to say, Dan, I'm kind of convinced that all these sightings you chalk up to a black bear. So why don't we take a look at this post out of Kimberly. I'll pull it up here. Nope, Bigfoot's real.
100%
Bigfoot's real. Look at that. It's just not even close to a black
looking
bear.
Looking at this photo.
Look at that. I'll tell you what that it is. It isn't a black bear. I now am an expert on the gait of a standing black bear and what their posture looks like. That's not a black bear. That's a Bigfoot in Kimberley, British Columbia. Look at that thing. Now there's another picture. I guess it was thrashing around. Look at that. That's not a black bear. Come on. I just became an expert on spotting black bears. That is not a black bear.
These are convincing photos. If you take them at face value, these do look like what you would, like if you were to take a photo and be like, this is a Bigfoot. And I'd be like, that is a photo of Bigfoot, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, look, what I can tell you is I don't know what this is. I don't know what it is, but I'll tell you what it isn't. That's not a black bear standing walking through the snow.
It's not. But is it a person in a bear suit?
No.
Is it a Bigfoot in a bear suit?
Possibly. That's something we've never talked about. Is he using tools? Is he skinning animals?
Maybe. That's why he goes into why there's large populations of black bears. He goes and he finds the black bears to make his bear suits. Yeah. We cracked the case. We've done it.
Moving on from
another mystery solved.
Yeah, done it. Chalk another one up for the good guys. Bigfoot's real. We went full 360 there. Bigfoot was real. Bigfoot is big. Black bears. Bigfoot is real. Now moving on, we got a segment where we're going to review trending UFO photos or UFO videos. We don't have a name for it, but this one is this segment sponsored by Willy Fistergash. Terrible name. There's no way that's his real name.
I mean, no.
But hey, thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for sponsoring this segment. We would be absolutely remiss. Is that the word?
Depends on what you're using it for.
Well, I'm using it. dude, popping off in the fucking, you know, the last couple of weeks on MUFON, and on Facebook and on Twitter, people have been seeing a UFO, a bona fide UFO in the sky, a white sphere UFO. Let's take a look. People have been seeing this. There's been clips of it with the moon, people going moon and been like, what the fuck is that? Right? And it's been getting reported on MUFON all over the continental United States. One in Latin America. It was going wild. People were sending it to us, looking at this, and, you know, amazed. Like, oh, is this an invasion? We're being invaded. There's these white circles everywhere. There's one apparently drifting over Canada right now. But we cracked it here first. I want to tell everyone that months and months ago, we've been warning y'all about China lanterns. All right? Right?
That is a factual statement, yes.
That's a fact. We have a shirt. We have a shirt that says, keep those eyes on the skies. And then it says, China lanterns on the bottom with it going. We called this. Is it China lanterns? Not, I mean, technically.
Depends on what your definition. If you're using a very, very loose definition of China lanterns, perhaps.
But this is an interesting one where it came out and this was cracked right away. We've seen developing story as of yesterday. It was reported
there's multiple, right?
Are these things drifting over the continental United States, North America, Latin America, are Chinese surveillance balloons?
Well, we're not 100% sure what they are yet, but
well, China is saying that they're weather balloons, yes.
which the U.S. is like, hey, that's our line.
Yeah. But see, the interesting thing to this, like, is if this is, in fact, this gives me hope. It gives me hope that they're that because, you know, a lot of times when we're talking about UFOs and the rare UFOs that, you know, take off at tremendous speeds and move at unbelievable. We've said, you know, maybe this is a foreign technology that we just don't know what it is. Right. So I can cross that off my list because we know, well, China's still using balloons, right? Because we've said, like, maybe this is, like, some of these UFOs, these wild ones, are advanced, like, surveillance drones and stuff. And it's like, well, China ain't using them. They're old school, just drifting fucking 99 white balloons.
These balloons have been spotted, apparently. Apparently, this may not have been the actual first time that these things have been sighted. Like, they've been sighted, like, years past in the last few years, that these might have been actually been released. And then whether they're collected or however China is collecting their data from these things, we don't know what they are. We do know that it is a balloon. From this photo that Brayden has up, it looks like just this white balloon. Usually weather balloons, they have like a little, they'll have something hanging down beneath it, which is the case with this balloon that we see as well. People took some close up, some really neat close up, high def photos of this one. And you can see that below it, it has some type of some type of sensor array or surveillance equipment. Array. China is saying that it's a weather balloon, that these things have gone, you know, when they, yeah, you can see something hanging down from it, whether that's some type of solar, you know, solar power collection array or something for whatever it's got in there. And Braden's showing the picture now that the U.S. has shot it down.
Do you think it was a little bit overkill to shoot a missile at a balloon?
Well, that missile, maybe, because apparently the one that they used was an AIM-9X Sidewinder missile, which apparently costs about $400,000 a pop. So maybe. I mean, that's a drop in a bucket for a trillion-dollar military budget, putting it to good use, I suppose. That missile's probably been hanging out in the armory for, I don't know, probably since the Gulf War or something. But like, gotta do something with it.
Yeah, I mean, so it'll be interesting to what comes of that. But it was an interesting thing because not very often do you have these trending UFO reports that flow right into what the explanation is and then see them being shot down. Like, this, like, chain of events doesn't happen all the time.
I saw some interesting comments about it because they're like, did you really have to shoot it with a missile? It's like, literally, dude could have just he could have just like opened up the cockpit, pulled out a service pistol and shot it. Like it probably would have been a little better.
I thought people like they were like sending warnings, being like, please do not shoot the Chinese balloon, because I thought as soon as, you know, Americans were like, it's a what? It was just going to be like absolutely this. So I started blasting.
Look, are you like Dan and you got a trip to Thailand coming up and you want to impress the locals? Well, then you want Rosetta Stone. It's been the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 different languages offered. It's got fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient, flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with mobile app or at your desktop on your own schedule. Rosetta Stone has amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's a lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
Sure, there's competitors to Rosetta Stone, but Rosetta Stone offers more languages and a lifetime membership. You could go over to Babbel and get 60% off, but it's not for a lifetime. That's why we're promoting Rosetta Stone today. All right, Theorites, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Alien Theorist Theorizing listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your damn life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Or look for the link in the show notes. Peace!
Just got a free coffee with my EarnaFi points.
Your what?
The points I get with the new EarnaFi app from BP and Amoco. I got 250 for signing up and more every time I fill up or buy anything in the C-store.
Oh, can you use points for fuel?
Of course.
And discounts and deals?
On anything.
Oh, like chips?
Mm-hmm.
Sodas?
You got it.
The actual slushy machine.
Only what's actually for sale. But you do get double the points for the first 90 days. Just go to EarnifyRewards.com to download the app.
Available at participating locations only. App content is subject to change.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
So, you know, obviously we don't have Zell here, so we have the old Reanimatron. It may look like...
We pulled it out of storage.
Yeah, hold on. You know what? It's kind of... It's a little difficult because I can't run everything all at once. So my camera, when I turn on the Reanimatron, my camera might turn off. That's just how it is. So sit tight here. We'll try to fire it up right now. All right. Wow. Worked so good.
Yeah. Pretty smooth since it's been laying dormant for quite a while. It seems to be still on point.
So this is UFO case file of the week, brought to you by goddamn stankin' ass. Sponsored by stankin' ass. Thank you for sponsoring this segment. This UFO case file of the week, Clara Elizabeth. It was on the 27th of December, 1954, that Elizabeth Clare had her first close encounter.
December 27th, that's my birthday. Nice job, Brandon Madron. Wow.
Totally random. Weird. But she had two prior involvement with UFOs. In October 1917, she and her sister had watched a meteorite seemingly about to collide with Earth, but being deflected by the power of a metallic object which came in near the meteorite, apparently protecting the planet. Holy shit.
What?
How have you never heard of this? This is unbelievable. In 1936, so this is the first.
That was the first one.
That's the first. Holy shit.
Okay. All right.
Wow.
All right.
In 1937, while flying from Durban to Barrowanath, Elizabeth Clare watched...
Like city ruled by the old ones, like Cthulhu, Lord Cthulhu.
Elizabeth Clare watched as a blue-white light streaked towards her plane. When it leveled out and paced the aircraft, she could see that it was a circular object, changing from blue-white to gold. Oh, the old blue-white or black and gold argument.
It went from Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan, back down to regular Super Saiyan. Yeah.
And eventually to red.
Super Saiyan God.
Shortly after, this craft shot high above her aircraft and disappeared. Was she quiet on this airplane? Or was she like, holy shit, look at that. So now we get to the, listen, if blocking, I don't know what this says next. I truly don't, because it was a random pick. But if the first story that isn't even, it's an asterisk. Her first encounter, she watched a meteor, right, get deflected by a UFO.
Okay.
You've got to think that whatever happened on December 27th is going to be good. So we're going to get into it right here.
Okay.
At 10 a.m. in the morning of the 27th of December, 1954, Elizabeth Clare was drawn out of her farmhouse in the foothills of Drakensberg in South Africa by a commotion from the farmhands. Elizabeth ran to the hill on which she had her sighting in 1917 and saw a brilliant flash of light in the clouds above her. An enormous saucer-shaped craft, some 50 feet wide, descended towards her. The object stopped some 12 feet above the ground, hovering near her, and although she was afraid, she resisted the temptation to run. The whole of the ship was flat, rotating around a squat dome. Three portholes faced her, and in one of them, she could see a humanoid looking out. He seemed to view her nonchalantly while she was attracted to his good looks. He's just like, hmm. Oh. No interaction took place, and the craft
extraterrestrial thirst trap strikes again.
And no interaction took place, and the craft took off. In April 56, Elizabeth had a compulsion to return to the farm and to her flying saucer hill. When she reached it, the spacecraft was resting on top as if waiting for her. This time, the humanoid was outside the craft. He was tall with a deeply lined face, clear gray eyes, high, prominent cheekbones.
Well, I find him attractive.
And white hair. He wore a one-piece cream-colored suit. Bold. That's a bold look.
Cream-colored. Yeah, must be the heat. I mean, it's probably sunny in South Africa. Yeah. It's probably a good idea to wear light colors. Probably keeps you cool.
As he took Elizabeth's hand, he said, "Not afraid this time." What the fuck?
No, it's not funny. Serious.
And she felt she trusted him. Elizabeth allowed herself to be taken aboard the saucer, which took off, giving her a view of Earth from thousands of miles above. The saucer took Elizabeth to the mothership, which was peopled by many like Akon. The name of her contact.
Oh, I thought we had talked about Akon before.
Have we?
I thought we talked about Akon before because I was like, not the multi-platinum musical artist Akon. Yeah.
She was also shown pictures of the alien's home planet known as Meton. The people there are apparently vegetarians. There is no politics and no money, no arguments or war, and no disease. They can travel anywhere in our galaxy, but cannot move between galaxies. Akon's main reason for meeting was to recruit Elizabeth for a breeding experiment.
Okay.
But his approach was with love and compassion rather than the clinical or aggressive approaches of most such contacts. He wined and dined her, basically.
Sure.
In this case, Elizabeth fell in love with Aegon, became pregnant by him, and spent the last 4 months of her pregnancy up to and including the birth of her son on Aegon's home planet, where the child now lives with his father. Elizabeth Clare has written her own story in her book, Beyond the Light Barrier.
I know we have talked about that case at some point before.
There's no okay, but I maybe, but we didn't know the details.
I think there were some details that we didn't cover, but I specifically don't really remember spending the 4 months on his home planet. I don't remember that.
I don't remember that.
That's also.
I don't remember.
It's also possible this is old school randomatron, so it might have had some case files kind of stored up in the backlog. Might have just
been. Yeah, I don't have the upgraded version. So
yeah, we gotta update the firmware. We gotta
because it's been at Zell's house, so it's like I don't have the browse history from the random show. So mine's like a fresh one, right? So it's it is what it is. But we are approaching the hour mark for Space News, but before we go. Why don't we take a peek at a couple things on the Facebook group? I always like to kind of peruse in there. If you're not on our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/alientheoristtheorizing, you can find our page and join the Theorite group. Always some pretty good...
There's some gems in there.
Yeah. Chris Kemmerly with the Ain't No Hall of Ack girl. Phenomenal. I love it. We got this one. Us going to the next Alien Con by the Burmeister himself.
Are we supposed to be looking at it on the stream? Because we can't see it.
Oh. There we go.
There you go.
So we got the Ain't No Holla Back Girl, which is basically Gwen Stefani.
Ain't No Holla Ack Girl. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, with a Mars Attacks face. Hilarious.
Disturbing.
Us when we roll into Alien Con next.
Yeah,
I
nice seat.
Fucking wish.
We all won't fit in that car. You will barely fit into that car.
And then one other. Just head to this Facebook group. It's always a good time. We get tons of people interacting and making memes and posts of us. It's quite entertaining. And if you don't know, we got tons of case files coming up. Tons of awesome case files. This week we have. What's coming up? What are we doing? What are we doing this week? I forgot already. 260.
That would be AI and aliens.
Oh, AI and aliens. That's right. This Friday, AI and aliens coming out. And we're going to record that Monday. So that's tonight if you're listening now. So if you want to watch our live streams, get early access to this stuff and join the show, it's going to be fun. We're just going to be talking about artificial intelligence, real theorizing episode. You can catch that on our Patreon or Supercast. Get it early, watch the live streams on YouTube, or if you want to stick around, because me and Dan, right after this, we're going to record an episode about the Von Meter monster as an ATT confidential. 45 minutes hard. It's a wild case about basically a lamphead monster terrorizing people, terrorizing a whole town.
An American kaiju.
Yeah, basically it is. So if you want to get access to that, help support the show, sponsor a segment. You want to sponsor a segment? Anyone on Patreon, $10 or more, will slowly get through the list of all of you, and then. Honestly, thanks for the support. Thanks for coming and hanging out. We're gonna try to do more of these, and we'll see where they go, how they grow. This was kind of the tester, so we'll add more segments. And don't be afraid to reach out, send us space news. If you want us to talk about a UFO, send it to us. Ridiculous article that you want us to talk about in space news, send it to us. Send us that stuff because that's gonna be the show where you guys kind of give us the stuff you want to see. So, anyways. Anything before we head out, Dan?
No, I think that's pretty much, we covered everything. I think we're good.
Perfect. Right. This has been Space News, and we are signing out.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.